Hi, this is Paul, and I have my friend John Van Donk with me today, and we are going to have a conversation. John came out to my area. He has some family around, so he makes trips up to Northern California fairly regularly, and he had some ideas about leadership and starting new, we'll call them estuary groups for just for the sake of clarity now, but obviously any group that begins can self-brand and name, work on that kind of stuff. So John has a whole bunch of ideas, and John has a scheme, and I like John's scheme. So we're going to introduce John's scheme, and at the end of it, there may be something I know a lot of people have been sort of waiting for. Well, when's this thing going to roll out? Well, as I've said many times, this is more caught than taught. And so rollout is going to be very organic. In case you didn't see it, the Randos channel, I'll put a link below to the Randos channel and to a conversation that Job had with an American living in Europe and another European about starting, again, what just for the sake of this conversation, I'll call estuary groups in Europe. And so John has some ideas about how we can facilitate that and train leaders for that, partly because one of the things that I have seen in church planting is you can plant churches without money, you can plant churches without core groups, you can plant churches without facilities, you can plant churches without nearly anything, but you can't plant a church without a leader. So if we want to see estuary type groups start, they need leaders. And so that's what we're going to talk about. So, John, how did this whole thing come up in your mind? What was sort of the genesis of this?
Well, you of all people should know that because when I when I learned about your amazing conversations about Jordan Peterson and the start of your YouTube channel, it right away occurred to me that these kinds of conversations in the digital realm are all good and well, but people really need and want, or some people really need and want, the personal contact and face-to-face conversation that can only happen when you are in the same room. And so I suggested to you to do a meetup. Meetup had already been part of my experience in for other reasons. And so meetup.com is a platform that exists precisely to bring people together in the same room to share whatever their interests may be. And so I was eager to get a Jordan Peterson meetup going myself when Jordan Peterson was in Los Angeles. I already used the platform to get a few people together after the book signing, and we used that to connect with one another. And then when I had that conversation with you very shortly thereafter, you said, "Okay, well, I'm going to do that here in Sacramento." And apparently it worked. I mean, subsequent conversations that you have had with other people and with me, it's pretty clear that your meetup was an unqualified success from the point of view that, in fact, there are people who want to get together in the flesh to talk about life. And so then you were able to put some new direction in life into my meetup group. And between the two of us, we've kind of experimented, excuse me, and cultivated at least two groups that we know of, and perhaps several more that are precisely for that purpose, to bring people together in one room to talk about life.
Obviously,
Well,
before COVID.
that is, yeah, and that is the beginning of what it means to me personally. But now it becomes apparent that our world of talking about life is getting bigger, you doing it online and the Discord doing it in the online also. And yet there is still that hunger, and the video you just mentioned of Matthias and David, that video, really underscores an existential hunger for personal contact, perhaps further aggravated or facilitated or encouraged by COVID. We don't know how that all plays out, but there does appear to be a desire for people, excuse me, to be together. By the way, whatever cough I have is not going to go through the wires to you. So I'm not wearing a mask right now, but my cough is harmless. Don't worry about it.
Take a drink of water.
Okay. All right. All right.
Or some other beverage of choice that will help you get through this conversation.
There's no telling what is in this cup.
So John, when John and I have conversations, John is a planner. And so we have a whole script here that he wants us to follow. And I always sort of sometimes follow it. But the point one, and I think is a really important point, he says, this conversation is not about teaching people what estuary is. And there's a lot of that talk on the Bridges of Meaning Discord server. Those conversations will continue to have. And part of the reason I say that this is caught, not taught, is that I can't tell you what estuary is. I sometimes know it when I see it. I know what can kill it. And I have some ideas of what can help it to flourish. And so I think a lot of this is going to be trying things. And just Tuesday night, we had a meeting of our Sacramento meetup. And we wound up talking about the Discord there, which we try not to too much because there are other people in the meetup who aren't on the Discord. But what we've done in the Bridges of Meaning Discord is a lot of exploration too. How can this medium be used to facilitate the relationships and the conversations? But the entire premise right from the start of the Bridges of Meaning Discord has been, this is in some ways a step, but this is not the goal. The goal are real face-to-face, belly-to-belly, nose-to-nose, people meeting in groups, relating, and so on and so forth. And
kind of an incarnational concept.
Yes, to throw a Christian theological word in there. But the point of what John and I are going to talk about and explore today and invite some of you into is, in fact, with that goal. And we are going to continue to use electronic media as steps towards these other things. But again, the goal is in-person, relational, face-to-face. And I wanted to get that out front clearly, because no matter how, but with any current level of technology we have presently, there is always talking on Zoom is not the same as having a real life face-to-face relationship. It just isn't. And we understand that. So, all right. Where are we at, John?
Oh, we just about covered point four here. Our meetup groups, just to clarify that our meetup groups are sometimes about ideas and many times about life situations, about making your bed, cleaning your room, taking responsibility, and how to navigate the suffering we encounter. This is not going to be about some magic formula to make people do things they don't want to do. Yeah. It is not that we are recruiting leaders to do magic. We are recruiting leaders to navigate what will naturally and organically, I like the word organic in this context, what will naturally and organically happen, because it arises from an internal felt need. People want to be together. So what we're looking for is people who can facilitate that. Yeah. And so
jump on to the question about early on in our local meetup, we had a lot of discussion about, are we going to get around to talk about abstract ideas, or are we going to talk about personal issues? And that's actually something that we talked about in our meetup and have been wrestling with on the Discord. Part of the reason face-to-face relationships, in-person relationships that aren't too heavily scripted are, I would say, nimble and flexible, because sometimes the conversation will be about abstract ideas, meta ideas. Sometimes the conversation will get personal. And in my experience, a full-blown relationship has those aspects. Now, just because of the way consciousness works and time works, you can't have all of those aspects forefronted all the time. And so there might be seasons in which we have a lot of conversation about Jordan Peterson and abstract ideas. There might be seasons in which we talk about very practical things like cleaning up your room. And a group that is fundamentally interpersonal and relational will have over time the kind of bandwidth to have those seasons. And that's part of the reason, again, that we're not just saying, here is a book group. A group may study a book. Here is a video watch party. They may do a watch party, but part of what human relationships have is the bandwidth to afford the recognition that there are different seasons in our lives, and the relationships hopefully have enough of a spectrum that they can afford those seasons. Now, negotiating among the group, when is too much this, when is too much that, that's always a part of negotiation, and that happens naturally. And sometimes people leave a group for a season, then come back to it. Again, in church work, I've seen this stuff for a very long time. And so the knowledge and, you know, whatever wisdom I possess with respect to starting this and leading groups like this has a lot to do with my experience in churches, which are very similar.
Yeah. And that's a real great segue. I mean, we're talking now about, okay, so people had to have, really spent some time hanging out with you on your YouTube channel, perhaps even in the comment section, people who spend a great deal of time on the Discord server, and gotten actually quite close, up close and personal, but nevertheless online. We are now at the point of asking the question, if these people want to go deeper, where do they go? You know, if they want to do something local in person, where do they go? Right. And then, as you already pointed out earlier, a lot of it evolves around the availability of a leader to facilitate that. Yeah. So now we are going to move to
the you get there.
Okay.
Pre-COVID, you know, the way corporations and institutions like to roll out is there's this whole matrix, there's this whole plan, and it's all set. And then you can just be a little widget and plug into this, or you have a menu of options, you can select that. And I haven't done that, for better or for worse. But pre-COVID, you know, we had our West Coast tour.
Oh yeah.
What we're doing now, you know, that was basically the plan, seeding groups, because I have networks of pastors and churches and spaces, seeding groups in these places and these networks in order to facilitate them. Of course, COVID came along. I had the meetup / retreat at my sister's place in Connecticut. That we had in, when did we have that? I can't.
October?
No. Yeah, October 2019. And we had a dozen people there. So what we sort of have right now is some pent up demand, but we do want to get to the place where we will have, you know, we have a meetup group in Fresno, we have a meetup group in Southern California, meetup group in Alameda, meetup group in Chicago. We do want to get to the point where, again, we're going to go all the way up to British Columbia. We do want to get to the point of where we're going to have other events, such as, again, the Thunder Bay event, which hopefully will happen in September 2021. So this has been anticipated, and because I would love.
And there is another road trip in the making.
And everything's just sorting, waiting. So, okay, what will be the resolution of the COVID crisis, and whether that's a vaccine or whether we learn to live with it or however that happens, our goal is to facilitate this. And I think what then we will want to see is both a local manifestations, but also a network between them. And again, a network of personal relationships. So that's really my vision of what I'd like to see in terms of interconnected estuary groups.
And that is why we're actually talking now about the Estuary Host Network. Anyway, that's for down the road a ways.
Okay. So we've already got a name.
Yeah, I do.
Names are subjects to change.
Yeah, but you already pointed out very clearly the centrality of some form of leadership to further this, albeit vague and nebulous, cause and thing that we're trying to create, and which will take many different manifestations in different locations. But nevertheless, each one of them is going to require some kind of leadership. And so what we're really looking for today is to find out, okay, well, who are these people and how can we get them to talk to each other and encourage each other? And so that's what we're talking about. So there are people out there. Oh, you're going to start. Number seven.
I was just typing notes so that when I post it, and I had to get this estuary host network onto the list. Otherwise I'll forget it. Okay. Okay. Here's John's script for me. This is me reading the teleprompter. there are people out there, men and women like Paul,
you
have the sort of small group leadership skills that are conducive to facilitating conversations. And that's something that we talked about early on. And that's part of the reason, you know, people might say, well, Paul has a suspicious, sneaky religious motivation. Okay. Yeah. We've all got motivations. But one of the things that I noted very quickly is that churches for a very long time, really for the last 30, 40 years, have been cultivating small group leadership skills and have people in them that have those skills. And so part of what we're looking for local estuary group leaders are people who have skills and experience in working with small groups, because there are just certain things that you learn over time about how to keep a group going well and how to avoid pitfalls and side rails.
Not that complicated. There's even books about that. There's an Emmett book that's already fairly dated, but Emmett Griffin, who wrote a book about how to do small groups. It's a fascinating
book, actually. Tons of material out there in the church world on small groups.
So there are also people out there, again, men and women, who, like Paul, are high enough in openness to be able to hear people express views that may, in other settings, raise eyebrows. And these people then would be able to not react, not become defensive, not feel a need to defend God, Christianity, or the church. Yeah. We're working now with the assumption that if God exists, he's big enough to defend himself. The church has been able to survive long enough without me to defend it. And Chris...
And has been around long enough to survive me.
That too. So there's really no need to for us to be really uptight about, you know, having the conversation follow a certain dogmatic parameters. And so high in openness, Paul, you probably should explain yourself what you mean by high in openness. I have a real good feel for it because you demonstrated so clearly on your channel and on the estuary side. But what precisely, how do you define high openness?
Well, I, of course, Jordan Peterson and his Big Five personality profile, openness is one of those things. And so people who are familiar with Jordan Peterson's work will be familiar with this. But I think this is actually a key element of estuary, that sort of a non-defensive security that Christians have with respect to hosting conversations where you can be almost assured that heresy will be in the room. And I don't say that, and sometimes people will get very nervous about that. I don't say that to make light as a Christian minister of heresy. I say that because one of the things I think we see in creation is a certain liberty and security that God has. And so I think this is actually a vital skill that churches need to develop, because part of what has made churches the kinds of places where these conversations are not having is a certain anxious, insecure, defensive posture that churches have to. There's the scene in The Gods Must Be Crazy where the rhino is described as kind of the firefighter of the bush, where anytime anybody lights a fire, the rhino runs in and kind of tramples out the fire. And Christians behave that way. And that's a real problem, because a la Jordan Peterson, a la all kinds of other people, if people are going to make progress thinking through things, even as the old preacher saying goes, stinking thinking, if people are going to make progress thinking through things, they need to have an open space to think it out. If you're doing math, when I was in school, you needed scratch paper to work on problems. An estuary group in many ways is scratch paper. It's a place for thinking out loud. And people sometimes need a space in order to defend a bad idea. Even if they win the argument, they might realize, I don't like this idea that I just defended. And so you want actually a space in which people can think out loud. Now, again, that makes a lot of other people nervous, because what if the smartest person in the room is an atheist and they keep winning the fights? Well, I've seen the smartest person be in the room be a Christian who keeps winning fights and nobody's minds are changed. And I think that is because we have this rather modernist, shallow view of how human beings actually work. And so from a Christian perspective, I would ask, if not all these leaders are going to be Christian, but those who are Christian and come out of churches, to have a little bit of faith in God and the Holy Spirit and the process to, and have a little bit of security in that. So that's sort of speaking to Christians. But again, we are not saying that this is only for Christians or only for churches either. I think what we're going to find is that just simply by virtue of the amount of organization that Christians and churches have achieved, it's going to be far easier for them to start groups because they already have a space. They already have the small group skills. They already have some defined belief and some education about these conversations that matter most. So I think that's part of the reason there's going to be a high percentage of Christians in the midst. But by definition, this isn't something that is exclusively Christian.
No, and maybe this is also a good context to remind people of the concept of Jesus smuggling. And what you just described is the antithesis of that. We are trying to not come with a heavy agenda. But in my conversation just before our meeting today, I spoke with a person who is pretty well established in relationships. And he asked me, he said, is there such a thing as Marx smuggling? And is there such a thing as some other ideology smuggling? And is there such a thing as Jordan Peterson smuggling and Paul Vanderclay smuggling? And then worst of all, he said, John Van Dunk smuggling. And so I thought that he was really keen on the concept where it is not out of the question that people will show up with some kind of an agenda. The question is, to what extent are they able to temporarily suspend any urgency to enter that agenda into the conversation, and to what extent are they able to temporarily suspend that in order to facilitate the emergence of other ideas that can then intertwine with each other? Am I saying this right, or would you like to say it a different way?
Well, I would say, Eric Weinstein's idea of Jesus smuggling, I want to up the resolution on that a little bit, because what I think he is pointing out is the annoying and sometimes obnoxious habit of Christians to come in and say, well, Jesus is the answer. Okay, what does that mean? Because if you actually look at Jesus' ministry that you find in the canonical gospels, Jesus is very clear that he is the answer, but he doesn't smuggle himself in a way that he's a pat answer or an easy answer or an assumed answer. In fact, the way that Jesus seems to promote himself as an answer seems bottomless. And I think that you're exactly right that, Marx smuggling or woke smuggling or anti-racism smuggling or Jesus, it's basically that, the American commercial marketing approach is, you have this problem, here is the answer. And Christians have been doing that with Jesus for a long time. And as a minister, what I see is that, okay, those who buy the answer and are confronted with Jesus very quickly begin to realize that this isn't like Pope Peel's, you know, kitchen magician here. That in fact, the deeper you get into Jesus, there will be more questions. And there will be, which is exactly why the just will live by faith, not the just will live by pat answers. Because faith is what you actually need in a participatory, in a perspectival way to lean in and to continue to enter into the unknown with a degree of confidence that you are not alone and that his rod and his staff will guide you. And so that smuggling of a pat and easy answer is very much what we want to avoid. And what the risk of, you know, and how I see Christianity is that we, in fact, lead them into deeper waters where there is often chaos and unknown, but your rod and your staff will guide me. Even to, you set a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And so perhaps another way we can talk about estuaries are, we are going to set tables before enemies and have them sit together and eat.
Stumptish.
Stumptish.
Shout out to David and Matthias.
Yes.
Stumptish.
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful image, by the way.
Yeah.
So, okay.
It's not original to me. we'll let that murderer rapist David take credit for that one.
Oh, okay. So we're on 9 and you're it.
Oh, I'm it. I've got another line here. I always have to say, like Paul, people who want to talk, have a passion for dialogue, who thrive in participating in free-flowing ideas and see open conversations as a tool for personal growth. Absolutely. That's the kind of people we're looking for. Now, as David and Matthias and Job noted, a lot of people, you know, in many ways, this is easier for me because I have a YouTube channel and there are at least enough people around that will gather. And so when I set up a meeting, people will come, and not everybody has that. But I think the conversation that David and Matthias had were right in that it is better for your group to stay small and grow slowly and organically.
Yeah.
Because what happens in there is you have all the subtle little recalibrations about, okay, we're always negotiating. We're always improving the group. Now, the danger of that is you create a holy huddle. And so you're going to have practices to always try and keep the group open. And again, church small group materials are full of answers about this kind of thing. The empty chair, there's a lot of little tricks and hacks that you can use. But obviously, these groups are going to attract the kind of people who want to talk. And now at our meetup last Tuesday night, we had someone drive in from Rio Vista, which you know where that is, John. That's where we had our lunch. Yep. Drove in from Rio Vista, who's sort of lurked on the Discord. And he didn't actually say much in the group. Well, in our group in Sacramento, we got plenty of talkers. So, you know, there's never any question that they'll be talking. Will it be something worth listening to? That's the open question. But the point is, these groups are going to be full of people who process extroverts, who process externally, and we're going to need leaders who can listen, because that's actually a really key skill for leaders. But yeah, these are the kinds of people that initially I think will see the groups, and then let the groups find a way to be helpful enough and life-giving enough and engaging enough where people will want to bring their friends and have enough confidence in the quality of the group to bring their friends.
That those friends will be respected and that their presence will be validated.
Even their sketchy friends.
Exactly.
Because we all have sketchy friends. I more than most, but you need to have sketchy. If you don't have any sketchy friends, you have a problem.
Yeah.
I have Jonathan Donk. Very sketchy.
There you go. So, and I wear that label proudly. So there are also people out there, men and women, who, like Paul, sense a clear calling from God to connect with people outside the Christian community of which they are a part, in much the same way Jesus went out of his way to connect with people outside of the religious establishment, people like Matthew, Levi, and Zacchaeus, tax collectors all, and Mary, Joanna, and Susanna, none with traditional Jewish religious credentials, but dear to Jesus just the same. He seemed to have loved them.
Yeah. And I know people hate his story of his, Jesus tries to get away from it all. So he goes up to, into the Phoenician area, Tyre, Sidon, in that area, and meets the Syrophoenician woman. And people don't like the way Jesus talks to her. But, you know, in the end, he heals her daughter. And how I imagine Jesus based on reading the Gospels for a very long time, Jesus could be wry. Jesus could offend some people sometimes. Jesus wasn't always nice, but had a tremendous capacity for kindness. And so I think these groups are for people who love people. And people can be annoying. People are messy. People are dangerous. But I think the real fun in life with this world so full of people is to meet people who are messy and offensive and dangerous. And again, if you have a posture of personal security and openness, you can learn to grow and be in groups of people who are dangerous and messy and offensive and obnoxious. One of the things that happened in our local meetup group is that we have a number of people who are low in agreeableness, very low in agreeableness. And people who are low in agreeableness are disagreeable on a very regular basis. And leaders of groups like this are going to have to figure out both how to not let people like this throw them, but also figure out how to approach people like this when their disagreeable qualities are beginning to poison the group, to be able to kind of take them aside and say, I know you have these ideas about this. And I know you have little, you suffer fools. You don't suffer fools lightly, et cetera, et cetera. But for the sake of the group, can you tone down your condescension and maybe clean up some of your dismissive insults? Because not everyone has rhino skin here. And in the process of these things, probably lead even disagreeable people into some practices of valuing the group and valuing members who are perhaps a little bit more thin-skinned.
Yeah, I like the way you say that. And you're up next at 11, Paul.
My script.
Yeah.
Oh,
you will pastors. Thank me later.
Yes.
You will
yes.
Thank me later.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I picked this one for you especially.
Well, he picked this one for me because I'm talking about people like John in this group. That there are out there a lot of individuals. One of the things, John sent me a text a few days ago, and he was having a conversation with some people about estuary type things. And he said, some of the people said, well, what happens when your walled garden becomes something of a cesspool? And that's churches. So what happens on Sunday morning is, you know, Rick, some of you know Rick. Rick does a lot of our AV at church right now because he and I have been developing all this computer stuff to put Livingstone stuff out there. And Rick and I will go back to this little room that we're using for the AV stuff, and we'll take a look at what we did and look for glitches and stuff. And then Rick will often pull up other churches on YouTube. And I look at so many of these churches and think, I would never in my life want to go there. And it isn't just for theological differences, although there are some. It isn't just for stylistic differences. And of course, the kinds of churches we're pulling up on YouTube have, you know, thousands of members locally and tens of thousands of followers internationally. These are mega churches. But I find these corporate spaces to be very consumeristic and not terribly sensitive to individuals and their needs.
And hard on the pastor.
Yeah, I'm getting to pastors. Just with some of the people with the biggest psychological or personality problems I know go into psychology. Some of the people with some of the biggest spiritual problems I know go into ministry because they're trying to heal themselves. And there are out there many, many people who at one point had thoughts about going into the ministry, went into the ministry, and it didn't go well for a variety of reasons, usually, because here's the thing about a church. Churches are complex, dangerous places too. And people regularly get their feelings hurt. They get offended in church. Churches have rules. And part of, obviously, Estuary is a loosening of some of that. And that's why my image has been churches are walled gardens, and those walls are there on purpose. Those walls have gates and doorways where you can get in and out. But Estuary is much more of an open space. And that makes Estuary in some ways more dangerous, but there are certain dangers in walled gardens as well, because the walls are patrolled and the rules are enforced. And Estuary, it's a little less so. The rules in Estuary tend to be a little bit more natural. But part of what we're looking for in leaders are perhaps some who, for one reason or another, couldn't lead a walled garden, but temperamentally might be better suited to lead an estuary. And there'll be a certain natural selection that happens in estuaries. And it could be the case that if you didn't have the skills to lead a walled garden, you don't have the skills to lead an estuary too. That might be the case. And maybe you'll just be a really important part of an estuary, because there are always point leaders and role players. We see that on basketball teams and football teams. That's sort of just human dynamics. And I don't think there's anything of lesser status of being a role player than a point leader. Sometimes it's a difference between a specialist and a generalist. So we are looking for people who perhaps have had difficulty fitting in walled gardens, because maybe you're high in openness, or have had some mistreatment in walled gardens. And we hope that you don't. Sometimes hurt people is a phrase, because it's true. And so it might be that in an estuary, there will be some work to do in terms of working on your relational patterns. But I sort of lost my way.
No, you did good, actually. I mean, this is kind of what it's about. The idea that certain, you know, leaders of churches may find themselves personally quite constrained by the demands of administrative leadership, you know, to be a church senior pastor who's got to keep the show on the road, protect the brand, and make sure that the budget is met. And then you kind of lose the opportunity almost to engage with people at a very personal level, because you have so many specialist demands in the church that are hard to delegate to other people, but that actually erode your own sense of calling, erode your own sense of, well, why am I really doing this? Am I now the guy who maintains this institution, or am I the guy who got initially called to come alongside people and be a spiritual leader or guide or resource too? And I think that for quite a few pastors in medium to large or any kind of size churches, if all you end up doing is setting up chairs and making sure that this or that thing is taken care of and that the bills are paid and all of that. And then in the larger churches, you know, am I the chairman of the board and I deal with all these highfalutin, you know, personnel issues. I got to make sure that all my underlings are doing what they're supposed to do. And in the midst of all of that, to actually lose the opportunity to come alongside people, almost like Jesus came alongside people and say, hey, how's it going? You know, how's your life? What are you struggling with? What, you know, what are your victory today? And so that's kind of another thing that I'm kind of imagining that that potential leaders in the estuary are the ones that say, you know, that part of my job was all good and well, but it didn't fulfill my sense of calling in ministry. And it didn't really give me many opportunities to do what, you know, what's close to my heart. I kind of got put into the institutional ringer, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're highlighting the other side of it. And for me, that was very much the case. Not that I love pastoring and I love the church and the walled garden aspect of the church doesn't bother me, but I also longed for a space. What happens in church is that you become a captive of the walled garden as a pastor.
Yeah, that's often. What I meant. Yeah, that's yes. What I meant.
And so I longed for a space where I could have atheists and woke people and anti-woke people and lots of other people just come and tell me I'm full of crap and say it to my face. Church people won't do that. They'll just say, well, thank you, pastor. And they'll walk home and have you for dinner. But the people low in agreeableness and my, they'll tell me I'm full of crap. And I, you know, you believe that God, daddy, I mean, they'll put it out there. And once it's out there, we can actually talk about it. And actually one of the guys I'm thinking about too, we have a young guy who's going to be a church planter in our Sacramento cluster right now. And during COVID, like church planters, they'll often go out and, you know, want to meet people in coffee shop. He can't do any of that. And so his mentor is telling him, you need to have a lot more conversation with a lot of people who are way outside the church. And you need to do that fast if you ever want to know enough to be a church planter. And I told him, I said, you got to start coming to my meetups because I got tons of those people and they will tell you exactly what they think about your religion and your church and all of that stuff in no uncertain terms. And they won't blush. Instead of talking to people who will be very nice to you and say, oh, I'm so glad you're planting a church. Isn't that wonderful? Walk away and think, boy, what an idiot. So no, there might be pastors of existing churches. There might be church planters out there that say, I'm a captive of the walled garden. And I didn't get into this profession to just, you know, clip the bushes on the inside. I came into this profession because I wanted walls and gate. I wanted doors wide open because the truth is that every walled garden lives in actually a continuous ecosystem with what's out there. Plants get brought in, you know, water has to flow out. I mean, and that's part of the idea of estuary, that the estuary actually shares an ecosystem with the walled garden. So some of the leaders, you might be a successful pastor, but on the inside, you felt like you're dying because you're a captive to the walled garden and you've gone for weeks or months or years without a satisfying conversation with someone who, you know, not only doesn't agree with you in terms of your beliefs, but might even be hostily against it to you. And if you're high enough in openness and secure enough in your own beliefs, that's not something that scares you. That's something that energizes you.
Yeah,
that's me. I mean, that is me. And that's why I, you know, if it's always a problem, and actually on the Discord, we talk about this quite a bit. It's a problem when we get too many Christians because then it starts to feel like the walled garden again. So then we got to start, you know, it's like a Gary Van Veen, who was a fellow missionary with me in the Dominican Republic, who comes from John's neck of the woods.
I know him really well. Yeah.
Yeah. Gary always would say to me, you know, Christians are like manure. When you put them all up in a big pile, they start to stink. But if you spread them around a little bit, they can do some good. Gary grew up on a dairy farm.
Yep,
so, and so that's another aspect of this, that if you are a leader out there and you are a pastor, and actually quite a few of them are in my network because they make comments and they listen and they watch carefully, and you look at your church as this constrained walled garden, then I think John Van Donk's, and I'll take credit for it too. What are we naming this thing, John?
The Estuary Host Support Network.
The Estuary Host Support Network. Not hose support, not support hose network.
No.
Host support network.
We might end up calling it that.
The support hose network. But no, that's, you know, that's, I very much want to see, because and that's actually part of the reason that I have always continued to reach out within my CRC circles, because I know that there are pastors who got into this because they hunger for this, and their particular walled garden won't. I mean, I've had guys, I mean, the Chicago meetup, two of the guys that started that meetup, not see it. They went to their own churches and said, I just want a room. And two churches turned them down. And that made me furious. And so I said, I'm going to find you a place. And so I, you know, used my own network of CRC pastors and my own influence and talked to one. And of course, their council was nervous. They had to meet about it. But then the pastor came to the group and brought people to the group. And because I think in the heart of many pastors, there's a desire, because if you're going to live out this faith, you don't want it to be a hothouse tomato. You want it to be thriving and moving out there in the wild. And so, no, absolutely, John, absolutely. So great point. That's why I keep John around. He always has scripts and stuff for me, but he has really good points. And once I catch up, I see the value of it.
Yeah. So number 12, there are people out there, men and women, who themselves are in the midst of a faith crisis, who are no longer sure of what they once believed, who no longer stand firm in what others may consider orthodoxy, and who can fully relate to the swirl of conflicting ideas that are found outside of the walled garden, which is one way to view the church. They may themselves be hanging on to their faith as by a tiny string, but they can come alongside others and listen well, and perhaps better than those who have to uphold the official dogmas of the church. And they're able to be transparent and authentic in a non-manipulative way. And I think that those people, if they have a few other small group skills, can be of great value in terms of their honesty, in terms of their willingness to say, hey, you know, I don't have all the right answers to all the big questions. Here is my tiny string, and it's working for me for now. But I can certainly understand that you may have been or are still on a journey of exploring ideas of orthodoxy or aspects of Christianity or a whole different belief system that somehow, you know, you're trying to make it work for yourself. And I can relate to that because I am trying to make it work for myself. And so that is a kind of a difficult thing to admit publicly. You know, there's not going to be that many people who sign up for that online and say, yeah, you know, I really don't. I'm on a path to deconstruction. But at the same time, this estuary thing may be an environment where they themselves can more meaningfully hang on by their thin thread. And I mean, in all honesty, there is a part of me that is precisely there. I mean, I'm not the most orthodox person, as you well know. And yet the engagement, I mean, I have received an affirmative vote from the senior pastor and the elders of my church to do this. They know who I am. They know what I believe and don't believe. They have heard me talk about different things in different contexts. And so they, you know, I've tended to move myself to the edge of that community. And then there are other people that say, no, John, you're not at the edge of our community. You are an integral part of our community, so you can well represent our church even while you hang by a thin thread. So, I mean, you know your own role in that whole journey. So if you want to say more about that, you know, I'd be welcome to hear that. But my point is that you don't have to have the people who can give the appearance of having it all together to be the leaders. It can, in fact, be people who are in John Sook's famous words, not sure.
Well, and part of, so again, I stumbled onto my channel and this thing sort of grew organically around me. And I sort of began by noticing people coming back towards the church because of Jordan Peterson. But the more I listened to people, I also noted that people who were, to what degree they were aware of it or not, in their own psyches, deconstructing, were also listening to my, because many people that I've known who have been deconstructing don't want to deconstruct. They have, some of them have grown up in the faith. They know the relational cost of abandoning the church. But in all honesty, they have some deep questions and issues. And so they are hanging by a thread. And there was an article and a blog that my niece edits called Post Calvin, who was this young woman who was out of Calvin just a few years, and she's deeply disturbed by the number of Christian Reformed people who vote for Trump. And I was so struck by that post because she basically said, you know, my faith is hanging by a thread. And now, again, there's a political matrix there that, you know, a lot of my audience will bristle to, because many in my audience are conservative. Many in my audience are not. The sheer diversity, the political diversity of my audience is something that I frankly am proud of, even though both sides often want to purify it and narrow it.
Oh, well, isn't that not what we're doing right now?
That's certainly not what I'm doing. I don't know about you, but Dom.
No. But you should be proud of it. You should very much be proud of it.
And I know that, you know, even some core people in my audience, they would love nothing better than for this audience, that than for my channel to become, you know, politically partisan in one way or another. But I absolutely refuse that. Not that I don't have my own political ideas. But the point is, many of the young people that are hanging by a thread, and some of the older people, because Vedank is many things, but young is not one of them. young, it's pretty relative. But
I just had lunch with a 94-year-old guy, and I felt really young.
But many people, they want to maintain a relationship to the church for whatever reason. They want to maintain a narrative thread of faith in their life, and they're finding it exceedingly difficult. And churches are often not places where they can talk about these things. They are places where they do smile nice for the pastor, but then walk away with their own misgivings or angry moments or what have you. And in my opinion, an estuary group, the reason I think it's in the interest of churches to host groups like this, and if they have appropriate leaders for them, support them, is that the surest way to ensure someone's deconstruction is to show them that cold gray wall of the garden and say, here's the line, in or out. And to let them talk, to let them process, to give them a place where they can share their heretical fears or misgivings or anxieties or even beliefs at some point, and bring them out in the open. This happens in pastoral conversations if the pastoral relationship is healthy. And so I think it's in that way that the walls of the walled garden don't serve the mission of the walled garden. And so for that reason, again, you might be a person who has some small group skills, who has some reach, and for that reason, you might legitimately say, I shouldn't be an office bearer in church, or I shouldn't even be a small group leader in church. Or you might have a social relationship or a romantic relationship or a sexual relationship that one way makes you disqualifies you from certain roles in the walled garden. And you might not even have a problem with that, or you might have a huge problem with that. If you have a huge problem with that, you might not be a good small group leader, because it's those huge problems that usually make for dogmatic
big agendas, yeah,
defensiveness and big agendas. But an estuary group might be an ideal place for you to be able to just continue to take in knowledge and information and keep an open mind, even about the sprouting dogmatisms in your own reactionary self. So, I agree with that, John. I think it's a great point.
Okay.
That's why we go through John's list. I forget these points and he has them written down, you know, the wisdom of paper and pen.
Number 13.
Oh, that one's me again.
It's you. Yeah.
I'll just read it first, then I'll comment on it. Finally, there are people out there, men and women, who, like us, are convinced that the changing of hearts is not something we mortals can do. Oh, and a very Calvinist point for John Van Dunk. Nor would we be responsible for that. That's God's job. That happens when the Holy Spirit shows up, but when we set the stage for people to open up about what they think and believe, when we create a setting for honesty, mutual respect, and acceptance, there's no telling what can happen. I very much agree with that. And I've said so many times on my channel, part of, whereas in the form of ordination in the Christian Reformed Church, we, as ministers of the word, we very much do take on as part of our mission to be an evangelist. But in my opinion, evangelists are midwives, because it's the Holy Spirit that does the work. And it is God who does the quickening and the molding and the shaping. And if any careful reader of the Bible will notice that God, Paul, participates in the stoning of Stephen, through his writings, one of the most important evangelists of all time in Christianity. He calls himself the chief of sinners, although other people certainly claim to give him a run for his money. So this is something important, that the goal of an estuary isn't necessarily, the agenda of the estuary isn't necessarily, we're going to bring lots of people into the church and make them believers. I certainly would want that, because that's what I want for people, and I think it's the best way to live, but by no means an overbearing agenda. And the real work of the group is process and sharing and relationships and giving space for people to test out ideas. Jordan Peterson has this great idea where part of the reason we have ideas is that things can die in our head without having to die out there in real life. And so that's part of what estuary is for. It's a sandbox where people can play with things. And, you know, they might come to a group one night and be all for something, and a month later they come back and they say, you know what I thought last month? I was an idiot. And you can do that in a sandbox. Yep. And everybody in the group will say, yeah, you were. We told you, you didn't listen. That's another problem you have, but you're still part of us. And we'll still be here a month from now to listen to your next idiocy, because we know it's coming. I mean, that's those kinds of relationships that actually over long periods of time help people to grow and mature and perfect and become better people.
Yeah. So we've just gone through a list of about six or seven characteristics of the kind of leadership that we're looking for. And I don't know, are you going to post this in the notes or parts of it or all of it? Because my
post
next
what,
point,
the paper that you have here?
My next point says, if you read the above.
Oh, okay.
I can imagine, or if you heard the above.
Google has a limit of like 5,000 characters in the notes. Oh. We could put a link to this Google Doc and people could read it if they wanted to. We could do that too. Okay. Or you could distill it into just some bullet points.
Okay, and I'll do that. I'll do that myself, yeah.
Okay, and you can send that to me.
Yeah, so if you heard the above or read the above and you imagine yourself to be one such person, here comes the kicker. Then you probably are already involved in some activities that help you connect with random people, but not necessarily in any particular church context. You are who you are. You can't make this stuff up. If you are one of these people that we describe, you probably are already doing this kind of thing. And then I'm having you say, and you may not feel any particular reason to become part of a larger context or effort.
And that's part of the reason why, you know, this, we've stayed pretty loose with that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was on the Stoa channel and he led off the Stoa and I thought, wow, he's kind of doing what we're doing. And I think that's cool.
Yeah.
And we should
affirm and validate that wherever it takes place.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I want to see more of it. And whether it's connected with me or not connected with me, I don't care.
That's
I just want
point.
It to happen.
Exactly. And so we're not trying to do any sheep stealing from any other estuaries. It's very difficult to make water from one river run through the other. That's going to be a bit tricky. But if on the other hand, you do get some satisfaction from sharing your insights with others who may be similarly inclined and learn from others who try to do what you do, perhaps we can help make that happen. And this is where we're really talking about bringing together, initially online in a virtual group via Zoom. We are looking to have perhaps a group of 10 or 12 people who feel a kind of an affinity with this process and who want to encourage and support each other to do it better. We're trying to create a group like that, or perhaps two groups like that. And if this video goes out to 15,000 of Paul Vanderclay's followers worldwide, and 100 people want to participate in this kind of group and who want to be facilitators of local manifestations, or what you call instantiations of the in the flesh get together of people having these conversations. If there are 100, then all the better. But what we're trying to do right now is create one or two groups of 10 to 12 that I will be the host of online. I made a pact with Paul. Paul said, John, he says, this may sound all really good, but I don't have time to be the host of yet another 1 hour in X amount of time session. And then I said to him, I will be the host of that kind of a gathering. And we can fully expect that if these groups come into fruition and they exist online, these are now estuary host support groups. You know, this is what we do online for the time being, because we can't all be in the same town. Otherwise, all these groups would exist in the same town. So this is really a way to expand the reach of the support network, which can now happen anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, really. So then it's fair to assume that every once in a while, Paul will show up at one of our meetings, our virtual meetings.
Yeah.
It's reasonable to assume that he will say, hey, how's it going, guys? And blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's not that he is totally divorced from this effort, but it's just not something that he himself can be totally in charge of. And that's why I volunteered to do this. But the other thing, so our vision is, in fact, to start a worldwide network of local estuary facilitators, people who have a passion for creating spaces for open conversation and the open exchange of ideas. But what we want to do first is to create some groups of 10 to 12. And if 100 people sign up, we need to find a way to pare that down to manageable size. And to that end, we have come up with a questionnaire. There is an application process. We would like you to let it be known that you're interested by way of filling out the online questionnaire, the link to which will be in the notes below this video. And so we are actually asking our audience to do, we're asking our audience to do-
It's a very short questionaire.
Yeah, very short. And it's also very rudimentary. It doesn't go into any very deep questions, but it is a way for us to say, okay, you know, with these 12 people, we can start a group on Thursday, and with these 12 people, we can start a group on Tuesday morning or whatever. And so we probably should have added to the questionnaire some elements of when am I most available. So I forgot about that. But that's the logistics of what we're trying to do here. we are assuming that our audience is that there are people in your audience, Paul, where when you post this on your channel, there will be some people there. Hey, I want to be part of that network. And there are going to be some other people that say, I know just the person who would do really well as an estuary leader of a local effort. Yeah. So I'm going to send this videotape to that person. I'm going to send the link to that person, and then he can decide for himself whether he is such a person, he or she is such a person. And then they can apply by way of the questionnaire to become part of the conversation. Yeah. Is that clear enough?
Very clear. And I think, you know, so when I watched Job and David and Matthias on their Randos video, what's the word, John? You're a European. You can say it.
Stammtisch.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not European. I can't say those things. But, you know, there's a lot of practical questions. And for me, I had a YouTube channel that was growing. Jordan Peterson was expanding. I subscribed to Jordan Peterson's channel. We had about 300,000 subscribers. The book tour hadn't happened. I mean, I just stumbled into this bang. And so starting a group for others, starting a group now, it's not going to be so easy gathering people.
Nope.
And so, you know, I've, in the conversations that we've had at our local meetups, I've had with other meetup people, this has been an issue. And again, part of this is a support hose or a host support group. And so this is a place where, and again, similar to an estuary group, it'll be multifaceted. They can have practical conversations about what do I need to do to get my group going? And that's fair. Or it can be probably some actually having kinds of conversations they will have in the group, but just among the leaders. And hopefully in time, it will become they'll become groups that people value. And again, I'm going to send this to some church planters, because if I were a church planter right now in COVID, I would be all over this thing, because I think probably if I were to plant a church right now, I would probably want to first start an estuary group and then probably start a church alongside. Because again, what you're doing in church is different than what you're doing, but
it should be different.
The relationship between the groups to me is fairly obvious.
Yeah.
And you're going to have people who they want to participate in the estuary. They don't want to go to your stinking church. You got other people who want to go to your stinking church and don't want to go to the estuary, and you're going to have both groups, and that's okay. Why do I say stinking with respect to church? Because the cesspool thing.
We know.
and that doesn't, again, that doesn't mean I don't love the church. I deeply love the church.
No. Yeah,
just like anyway, I don't have to explain it to John. John gets me. Others of you out there, and we'll see you in the comment section about this. I know we will. but that's the point of this. And if, like John says, you know, if our first group say we're going to want to limit the groups to a certain size, because too many people, if you know small groups, the group doesn't function. So if we have to start multiple groups, then maybe we'll go out there and look for, John and I have leaders that we trust. Maybe look for new leaders so that we have no idea how many people are going to want to be interested in this. It might only be 6. It might be 12. It might be 20. We just have no idea how many. So we're starting and we're trying. And like John said, I'm very interested in what happens with this effort. I can't commit to being there at every group meeting, but I definitely do want to pop in on some. And I think other people, you know, I don't know what Joey and Tyler are going to think about this, or Job. I wouldn't be surprised to have Job say, oh, I want to be a part of this. Or, you know, who knows? We just don't know, at least people who have showed up on the channel. But no, we want to get started, and we're going to start in this way. And if there's one thing I know about John as a leader, he's very adaptive and he's continually feeling out. And John has an edge for growing things too. Part of what's John also has a fairly entrepreneurial spirit, and he doesn't like to sit around. I'm a lot more patient and, well, let's see what happens than John is. John tends to be a little bit more, you know, let's get something going. Let's make something happen. That's sort of his temperament. And so I like the fact that he's doing this, because it's not something he's going to want to sit on. And John also has, you know me a lot better than you know John, just because I'm here talking at you all the time, but I trust John deeply because I've watched John in lots of different settings. And, you know, even though John has some theological points that probably mean he'll never be an elder of his local church, the reason they come around John and say, no, John, you're part of us, is because they do deeply trust him. And John, because he was a Christian Reformed minister, knows where the lines are. John will say, yeah, this part of me is a little outside the line. And he can be upfront. This is what the church teaches. This is what I believe. John knows the map. He knows the lay of the land. But he's also non-anxious about it. And so I think in many ways, I think John is perfect to lead an effort like this because, you know, John is a Christian. John is a Christian with his own thoughts and ideas that have been matured and grown over. He didn't grow up a Christian. He became a Christian. He became a minister. He stopped being a minister. Many points in John's story people can connect with, whether that means going into the church as someone who hasn't been a Christian or leaving the church as someone who has been a Christian, even a Christian minister, and then yet again becoming enfolded by his church and valued by his church. And I keep reminding John, because John would always make these comments about he's, you know, this is his church and blah, 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 blah. He's kind of on the outside. I'd say, John, that's a load of crap. You're nowhere near the outside of your church. You might have some ideas that place you in an interesting respect with the church, but you are deeply loved and respected and trusted by your not insignificant church community around you. And so, again, for that reason, I think John is really an ideal person to lead this thing. And this also, for me, is an example of how there isn't the estuary. There isn't one thing that Paul has started. So Joey and Tyler and Rick, you know, they're sort of core leaders amongst our local Jordan Peterson meetup. They got the Discord going. That's going on over here. John Vindonk. John, you never see John on the Discord. Discord's not his thing. John doesn't even watch most of my videos. I'll make reference to things in my, John says, I don't watch your videos. Watches some of my videos because the journey that I'm on, that many of you are on, John's not interested in a lot of those details. John's got just so much time left in his life. He's that old that he's got to be efficient here to really prioritize what's most important to him. So, but John
videos.
So John is going to, you know, this is an aspect that John is going to lead, and Hank and Sam and Chicago, you know, they're doing another thing. And, you know, others around the country who I won't name right now that I am in fairly regular conversation with, they are doing other things. And, you know, it could be that at some point in the future, depending on what happens with me, you know, I'm going to see if Livingstone's church can be saved. And so that's, you know, that's a lot of my focus now. Maybe it can, maybe it can't. A guy named David Snapper, who's a friend of John and I, who looks at church numbers, he says, Paul, your church is going through its natural life cycle and probably just going to die. And if that happens, then, you know, who knows what I do next in terms of what relationships I'll have with a church and whether there'll be more institutional forms. That stuff might change. I don't know. But for now, I am very comfortable with an ecology of different actors who are entrepreneurial in their own way, trying to establish something along the lines of the general vision. And let's throw stuff out there and see what takes. I would rather start 10 things and have 8 of them fail than to start one thing and to be white knuckled about it because everything relies on it. So that's basically who I am in this kind of thing. So that's why John, I think, is a great person to lead this, and we'll give it a try. And I also know John, he's entrepreneurial enough. If we try this for 2 or 3 or 4 months and he comes to me and says, this ain't working, then it didn't work, and we try something else. But I also know John is also patient enough, and I've seen that in his meetup groups, that He's not bothered if numbers get a little bit small because he has a sense of, no, the numbers are small right now, but this is worthwhile. And I see potential in the future. I'm learning, and the few who are participate, they find it meaningful too. And so, like the parable says, let's give that tree another year and let's water it and fertilize it and see if fruit can't develop. So, and I'm very comfortable with John's leadership, and I trust him. And so that's part of the reason that, you know, we're doing this the way we're doing this right here and right now.
Thank you for those words of endorsement.
That's what I was doing. I was endorsing you.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. And the viewers are invited to apply to a spot in an ongoing online Zoom conversation, which will be hosted by me about estuary groups like ours, and talk about how to start one, where we talk about the nuts and bolts of creating spaces for generous hospitality, whether they be inside local churches, alongside local churches, or outside local churches as standalone communities, private, confidential, non-recorded conversation. They will never be on YouTube. These are going to be Zoom sessions that will be private to the participants. They are not for other people to comment on or view or anything like that. We're going to that's kind of an important feature to the thing that we are able to speak freely amongst ourselves to see how we might give shape to things in the future without having the whole world looking over our shoulder, including you, Paul. So I'm going to put the notes that we use, the script, I'm going to refine it a little bit, and Paul will add it to the video. And then also added to the video will be a link to the questionnaire, the estuary questionnaire. And I think I'm going to quickly modify that a little bit so that it includes a place where people can indicate their preferred time frame. So I think we covered all the bases.
Good. No, I like it. I like it too. So
thanks,
thank
Paul.
You, John. Thanks for, you know, continuing to be the entrepreneurial pastoral leader in this thing. And again, John's not on my channel that much. And, you know, there's only a few videos out there with him. But John has been a very big part of this thing right from the start. And I'm really excited about his willingness to lead this effort. And we'll see where it goes.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to end the recording.